anytime we are factoring race into a decision, a clinical decision, whether it's ordering a test, interpreting a test, I think that's inherently wrong. Almost everyone that we do testing for has at least one actionable gene drug finding come back.
Welcome to GenotypeCast, a new podcast from Gray Genetics. Genetics isn't always black and white. News stories related to genetics often raise more questions than they answer. On GenotypeCast, we bring you insight from genetic counselors. I'm your host, Eleanor Griffith, a certified genetic counselor and the founder of Gray Genetics, an independent telehealth genetic counseling and consulting service.
So most people are going to test positive. It's just a matter of, would that ever be relevant for them? It's not strong data, and if you don't have good data, you're not going to have good results and you're not going to have good application.
Elizabeth Feig is a senior genetic counselor at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, Massachusetts, where she sees patients in the General Adults Genetic Clinic, Endocrine Genetics Clinic, and Pharmacogenomics Clinic. In addition to her clinical roles, Elizabeth is the BWH site coordinator and genetic counselor for the Harvard Clinical Site of the Undiagnosed Disease Network, a clinical research program through the NIH designed to diagnose rare disease through clinical phenotyping and genomic sequencing. She is also the program manager of Brigham Genomic Medicine, a research initiative through Brigham and Women's Hospital and Harvard Medical School focused on novel gene discovery. So, Elizabeth, thank you for speaking with me.
Yes.
I follow you on Twitter and you tweeted, I'd love to see the field of pharmacogenomics move away from race-based testing and the assumption slash delusion that people can be neatly classified as Asian slash Caucasian slash African. Population frequency isn't the same as a target test population. And you went on with a few tweets in a Twitter thread that we'll link to in the show notes and said race-based medicine is bad medicine. So I think that might not come as a surprise to a lot of people working in genetics, but it has been
yes.
a part of medicine and how we make decisions. So first of all, could you explain, what do you mean by population frequency isn't the same as a target test population?
Yeah. So I think when we talk about race in medicine and in genetics, it's a very complicated topic. It's a very complicated history and you know, one that has not has been very bad, I think, in a lot of ways, and damaging, and really kind of held the field back in many ways. Anytime we are using race as a category in medicine and genetics, I think that's a very flawed kind of place to start. When we are talking about genetics and different variants having higher frequencies in certain populations, what we're talking about is population frequency and really looking at geographic ancestry, population drift, you know, certain genetic variants being more common in certain population groups. And, you know, then those groups migrated and mixed with other populations. So that is a very different concept than race, which is a much more social construct where we are assigning different characteristics based on skin color. And that skin color is not tied, you know, it's really a separate kind of category. And so when we're using race in medicine or in genetics, I think that's inherently flawed and is not, you're not going to be collecting good data in that way. And so you're not going to have good outcomes, or, you know, whether it's in pharmacogenomics, genetics in general, or just medicine and the medical field. And so that's what I meant, I guess, in my tweet. I think that there, you know, in genetics as a whole, but especially pharmacogenomics, I think there's still a focus on using categories of race. So Asian, Caucasian, which is a made-up term, African, you know, using these very broad, very complex, you know, groups to say, okay, you know, we should be testing Asian people for this, you know, HLA allele, because we know that, you know, there's a higher risk. And if we don't know how we're defining Asian, is it, again, based on geographical ancestry? Is it based on that population frequency? Then we're not really using pharmacogenomics in, I think, a way that is going to be effective or give us good data to help patients and really, you know, test patients in a way that makes sense. Yeah. I think it's better to have a broad approach and really, you know, be offering the same testing to everyone.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I work in genetics, but not in pharmacogenomics. And it actually surprised me to hear that there was that that ethnicity-based pharmacogenomics testing, because I guess I had assumed that it was a broad panel that was the same for everyone, especially because I think of it as a newer area. So what are most labs doing? Are most labs asking about ethnicity and interpreting data differently based on the information they receive? Are they actually doing different testing, or like genetic counselors or physicians routinely ordering different tests for people depending on ethnicity?
So it really varies. And this is an area that I have also kind of been surprised by, I think, or learned a lot more about since we started doing a pharmacogenomics clinic at Brigham and Women's Hospital over a year ago. So I've been working in that clinic and helped set up that clinic, which is how I've really become more familiar and learned a lot more about pharmacogenomics. And I think it's a great field. I think it has so much potential. It's interesting because it really has been around for a long time in terms of, you know, our understanding about what pharmacogenomics is, really, you know, the basics of pharmacogenomics are, you know, that there are genes that can affect the way somebody responds to different medications. So essentially looking, you know, genomics with pharmacology. And so the type of testing being done is looking at common genetic variants. These are, you know, very, very common. Almost everyone that we do testing for has at least one actionable gene drug finding come back. But, you know, common variants that influence an individual's response to medications. And so really the goal is to maximize the response or the treatment. So having somebody benefit from a medication and be able to select the medication that might be most effective for them. And then minimize the likelihood of an adverse drug reaction or, you know, a negative side effect. So trying to choose the safest medication that would work best for that patient, and really be able to predict this before starting a patient on a medication. So I think in that sense, you know, it has great potential. It would definitely, you know, help with cutting down the therapeutic odyssey for patients, but also cut down on the, you know, major costs that are associated with drug-related hospital admissions, side effects that would prolong somebody's inpatient stay, or, you know, just complications related to not controlling symptoms as soon as you maybe could. So in that sense, I think it's really a very promising field, but it is an area where, yeah, I think there's a long way to go in terms of how we're using this technology and this testing in an equitable way that is the same for all patients. At our clinic, we order a 27 gene panel for all patients that we see, or that's offered to all patients that we see. And that's regardless of population, of ancestry, ethnicity, race. It's also, you know, regardless of any indication. So some patients come to us because they've had, you know, maybe problems with specific medications in the past. Maybe they had an adverse reaction, or they just, you know, didn't benefit from a certain type of statin, a certain type of pain medication, something like that. We still order the same broad panel for that patient. We don't order testing just in that specific clinical area. But other clinics work differently. Other ordering providers might, you know, just want to look at genes that would be related to that patient's, you know, history of adverse reaction. Or they might use ethnicity as a tool in guiding what tests that they should order. So I wouldn't say that there's necessarily one kind of approach that's, you know, being used across the board. But I think that's part of the problem, is that there's inconsistency. And I think that there's a lot of potential to misuse pharmacogenomic testing and just not be ordering the best test for everyone. I think that this information is helpful to have ahead of time. So I think for our patients, they are very interested in getting information about genes that, you know, might not explain that might not be related to the specific medication that they've had problems with, but getting information about any other, you know, medications or gene drug pairs that might have actionable information down the road if they were to ever need to go on a medication for, you know, that specific problem.
Before they have another adverse event.
Exactly. Predictive testing is always useful, I think. So having, you know, broad information in that way really can be very helpful.
Yeah. And I mean, a broader test obviously would be more helpful in that you're not limiting the power of the test by limiting the information you get back and ways in which it might be actionable. Is there a rationale for a more targeted test? Like, are people concerned about variants of uncertain significance in pharmacogenomic testing, or is it really more about coverage and insurance?
That's a great question. I think it's more about coverage and insurance. The pharmacogenomics is, like I said, a kind of different area in a lot of ways from medical genetics, in that it's more looking at specific variants that have been associated with a medication response. So it's not reporting out, you know, they don't call them pathogenic variants, because again, these are common variants. They have a very high allele frequencies. And it's, you know, most people out there would have a positive result for at least one gene drug pair that's actionable, meaning, you know, they would have at least one genetic variant that would affect the way that they would break down certain medications, and a result that we could use clinically and, you know, actionably if they were to ever need need to go on that medication. So most people are going to test positive. It's just a matter of, would that ever be relevant for them? You know, if I am a, you know, would have a different metabolism or, you know, rapidly metabolize or slowly metabolize, you know, medications like warfarin, for example, a blood thinner, that's not relevant unless I'm going to be needing to go on warfarin. So in that sense, it's not the same kind of pathogenic variant or variant of uncertain significance. It's really looking at known variants that that would affect metabolism of certain medications or activation of certain medications. So in that sense, the results that are coming back are relatively straightforward. There's not really that same concern for these being, you know, misinterpreted or, you know, not classifying them appropriately. So I think it's more an issue of, you know, if providers think that testing would only be covered if they're ordering, you know, specific genes that are related to an indication for the patient. So if the patient has had problems, again, specifically with a statin, you know, only ordering testing for genes that are related to that statin, which I think is, you know, kind of having a, you're missing out on the that broader information. And we're also, you know, technology for genetic testing has come a long way. And so it's, I don't know of any tests that are cheaper or, you know, would be a cheaper test based on how many genes are included. It's typically, you know, the same price for a set panel. And you can sometimes customize it or remove certain genes, but that wouldn't make it cheaper. So I think that's another area where there's very much a disconnect in, you know, how these processes and these tests work and kind of what people think is better, you know, what insurers do, which I think, you know, insurance policies often do not make a lot of sense or follow best clinical practices. And so that's why I think my preference is to order testing in a way that is clinically, you know, most appropriate for patients and serving patients in an equitable way. And then, you know, just kind of wait for insurance to catch up as needed.
Right. And ordering practices can, in principle, eventually impact insurance.
Exactly.
Exactly. That's always the hope.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
I think that's what we've seen in medical genetics, and still a long way to go in medical genetics. Don't get me wrong. There's still many, you know, insurance battles happening. But you know, we don't base our ordering practice solely on, you know, what is the insurance policy. You know, we order what is clinically appropriate and what is best for our patients. And then we, you know, argue and appeal and write letters of medical necessity as needed to try and get it covered if that's the best, you know, decision and the best test for that patient.
Yeah. And moving beyond pharmacogenomics, how do you see this focus on race and ethnicity and genetics and medicine more broadly impacting patient care?
Yeah, so I think it affects all aspects of patient care. I think having representation among genetic counselors, among providers, you know, clinicians in the medical healthcare system is huge. So, I mean, there I can go into many different aspects, but I think just the way that we're using testing itself, or, you know, anytime we are factoring race into a decision, a clinical decision, whether it's ordering a test, interpreting a test, I think that's inherently wrong, and not a good way to do it. I think, you know, if we're categorizing someone as, you know, African American or Black or, you know, Caucasian and white, are we basing that on their, again, geographical ancestry, or are we basing that on the color of their skin? There are different implications depending on what you're using. And it also is, you know, where is this data coming from? There's a lot of literature in pharmacogenomics on, you know, race-based testing and, you know, different populations with different variants. And it's really important to look at what categories they're using. How are they getting this data? Are patients being asked, what is your race? Are providers assigning a race based visually on their assessment of the patient? Do they look Black? Do they look white? Is it something that's in the patient's chart already, like in their medical record? If so, where did that come from? Was that patient reported? Is that, you know, physician assigned? And so even just looking at where are these labels coming from is, I think, a significant, you know, area where there's a lot of flaws and a lot of inconsistencies. And so just, you know, trying to narrow down, where are these terms coming from? What is this? What's the quality of data that we're using for these race-based, you know, associations and research papers? And I think it's not strong data. And if you don't have good data, you're not going to have good results, and you're not going to have good application.
Yeah. Do you think, is it fair to say that asking about race and ethnicity and choosing tests on that basis had some rationale before next generation sequencing, when we had to choose tests more specifically, more targeted, when it wasn't possible to have such a broad approach to testing? Or do you think that this has always been a problem, even before NGS made it possible to just take a broader approach to testing for everyone.
Yeah, I think that was definitely the rationale before NGS was available, was that, you know, if it's a matter of cost and, you know, trying to select the most appropriate test that, because you're right, it wasn't an option to kind of test everything and have that be the same price. So of course, you have to use other factors, and other factors were used to try and identify, you know, what test would have the highest diagnostic yield for that patient. And so definitely that was, I think, the rationale. I think now we are, you know, have different opportunities available. We are not confined to, you know, using these very specific criteria to try and, you know, justify that the patient needs this test and have it be a very specific test. We have the option to have, you know, broader approaches in genetics. And so I think we need to be using that and taking advantage of that.
Yeah, and it's been the case for over a decade, yes. Right? That our habits haven't necessarily changed.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think it's an area that is really touches all areas of genetics. You know, when we're talking about broad preconception carrier screening and, you know, pharmacogenomics, I think it's an issue across the board, but one that providers are hopefully becoming more aware of, more familiar with, so that we can serve our patients better.
If you are a certified genetic counselor and would like to come on GenotypeCast to talk about an issue related to genetics in the news, send an email to podcast@graygenetics.com.
The information contained in this podcast does not constitute medical advice and is also not a substitute for genetic counseling. Neither Gray Genetics nor any of its guests makes any representation or warranty as to the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this podcast. Evaluation of an individual's personal and family health history is a crucial part of genetic counseling and any recommendations.